SIFPOP Podcast is recorded in front of a live internet audience.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, we think perhaps you should have a universe before you try to expand it. It's SIFPOP.
Welcome to SIFPOP, streaming live on Mixlr every Friday afternoon or available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. I'm Aaron Dicer from YourMovieFriend.com. I'm joined by Andrew Ormsby from Flick Freaks.
Oh, boy.
Every week, we'll be joined by a pop culture guru to chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And today, he's back from the dead, resurrected. It's Josh Childs from the Nether Region.
Ooh. I will eat your soul.
Seriously, Josh, it's been over a year since you've been on the show.
Yeah.
Explain yourself. Why have you been missing?
Yeah, I've been kind of just out of the creative realm.
Wasn't there a project you were working on? I thought for sure you were working on a project. I apologize if you weren't. I thought you had some projects recently that you were acting in or doing stuff in.
Well, I've been slowly, last couple of months, I've been slowly working my way back into the world, kind of getting my muscles back.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of improv companies that I work with here in town, Court Improv and Spontaneous Comedy Company here in Nashville. And other than that, I've been doing just a lot, like, non-work that I don't create. I've just been doing a lot more acting and writing work for other people, which has been nice for this season. But yeah, like I said, I'm trying to stretch my creative legs again, and be on the front of the projects instead of helping people with their projects, kind of.
So what's some of the acting that people might have accidentally seen you in? Like, what's something that you've been in that you know, got out there enough that somebody, you know, might have checked it out or seen it?
Well, I'll say this. This is not out yet, but since you brought it up, I'm going to name drop. I just, a couple of weeks ago, it was a very small part, so it's not like I'm super name dropping, but I was in, I just did a scene with De Niro. So
what?
So that was pretty
first name?
Terrifying.
What was the first name of this De Niro?
Bob.
What?
Bob.
Are you kidding me?
That's pretty cool.
No. Yeah.
Wait a second, Josh. Come on. You just did a scene with Robert De Niro?
Yeah, man. It's coming out. It's the movie's called War with Grandpa. It's based on a children or a teen book, I believe. And it comes out at the end of the year. But yeah, I went down, shot a day with my brother, actually. Who's also an actor. And we had to, I don't know how much I'm allowed to say or not say.
Sure, but, sure, sure.
Yeah. We did a scene with De Niro. It was terrifying. when the movie's out, I will happily tell you all the story. I probably could tell you now. I just don't know for sure.
Sure, no. We'll be patient. We'll wait for the Robert De Niro stories for sure,
but,
man.
So I'll say this. This is probably safe to say. I had to rip open his shirt and and wrestle him. And so that was... It was one of those times. I usually enjoy my work, but that was one of those times where I did not have a good time until they said cut, and then I was on my way home, and then I reveled, like, in what I had just done. But in the moment, I was terrified.
I just exposed De Niro pecs.
I'm looking at this cast list for this movie, and it is stellar. It is.
Yeah.
Is it a sequel to Bad Grandpa?
No. No, it's actually, if you've read this is not a spoiler because the book is already out there, but it's basically about a kid who gets into a prank war with his grandfather. Cause he's,
oh, wow.
He's studying, I think, the French Revolution, maybe, and his grandpa moves in and takes over his room. And so, yeah, so a war ensues. It's really funny, really charming, and... yeah, it's got a cool cast, and yeah, it's. I think it'll be a really, you know, it's a family movie, so it'll have a wide audience. But
well, that's amazing, man.
If you do not know me, you will not recognize me. You know, and those things you never know what ends up on the cutting room floor.
Well, but, that's true, too. Yeah, for sure.
It seems like it's an important scene, so maybe they'll just whittle us down to, you know, a 20-second scene instead of cutting us out. But
I don't know, man. You were all over that Miley Cyrus movie, so.
Yeah, all over that one scene.
Dude, that's really cool. Yeah. That would be such a dream. That's amazing. Well, absolutely proud of you.
I will say that I'm not things don't scare me the same way, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
When I go on a set, I don't really get as nervous because I'm like, well, what can it be worse than? Is it more terrifying? Is it possible to be more terrifying than to do that with the most intimidating, maybe greatest actor living today? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know it's arguable, but he's up there.
Well, yeah. Not since...
He's in the conversation.
Not since Heat has a pairing been more anticipated than De Niro and Childs. So...
And Childs.
We are going to have a blast on today's show. We are going to, of course, do our buried treasure. We've got a Sift quest coming up later. We're going to talk our best ever Tom Cruise movies. And, of course, we're going to review The Mummy that came out this week. Before we get into the first segment, though, I did want to bring up, we had a little discussion, a small, tiny, like, how do you pronounce the gal's name from Wonder Woman? You remember this?
Gal Gadot.
I actually did some research on it, and there's yes, it's pronounced Gal, Josh. Very, very nicely done. I did some research on this, and here's why it's confusing. It's actually both. The T is pronounced, but it's Gadot.
Yeah.
So it's not Gadot, you would think a silent T, and it's Gadot. Also not Gadot. It's like Gadot. It's like it's got a little oot.
Gadot.
Yeah, Gadot. 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 Like that. You have to say it like
gotcha.
That.
Gotcha.
Israeli.
I'll remember that. When I do a scene with her, I'll remember that.
There you go.
When you rip open her shirt and wrestle with her?
No.
All right.
I just got all nervous again.
There has not been a pairing that we have waited for.
All right. Kick us off, Andrew, with some Do We Care?
Well, every single week I normally choose three topics for us to discuss in the entertainment world, and we discuss whether we care about them or not. But this week there is only one topic, as tomorrow, E3 is kicking off.
Now, this could be interesting because, Andrew, you are definitely the gamer guy. Like, that is a huge part of your pop culture universe and what you love. Yeah. I used to be huge into video games pretty much since I had kids and kind of my career started going towards movies, especially. I just don't play video games anymore.
Yeah.
Josh, what's your video game experience?
I hear about some things through my son, who's 9.
Okay. All right. So this will be interesting because I think you're going to have to kind of lead us along with what's happening at E3. I remember I used to get super excited for Nintendo's press conference every year at E3. Like, I used to watch it live and stuff, and I just haven't done that in a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, if our audience is curious, if you can go online and you can check out every single day. I think it's Saturday through Tuesday. The big companies are going to have a conference on every single day, so you can check out online and you can watch live, or they will be uploaded to YouTube afterwards. But I love it because it's a competition. They say it's not a competition, but every single year it's who had the best conference.
Yeah, and who had the best E3.
And mainly it's between the top three, you know, the big companies, Xbox with Microsoft with Xbox, Sony with PlayStation, or Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's which of those three had the best conference. And they also have the top third-party developers like Ubisoft and EA Bethesda. They all have their conferences as well to highlight the new games that are coming. This year is interesting because Xbox is going to be releasing their new console.
Yeah, that's true. Are they announcing it at E3?
They're showing it.
So the legit gotcha. Specs, it's actually playable, that kind of stuff?
They've had the specs and everything. Okay. What they haven't shown pretty much is what it looks like, when it's coming out, and cost. So those are the three things they're finally going to show.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be as powerful as a high-performance computer.
Okay.
So
oh, wow.
They're saying there has never been a console that's been as powerful as this, and then we know Sean from Geek.0.
Yeah.
I asked him about it. I was like, so is it really just the hype machine, or is it really going to live up to it? He's like, I looked over the specs, and it should be impossible for what a console to do, what they're expecting this to do.
Wow.
So I'm really excited for it.
What else are you excited about? Like, is Sony doing anything? Like, what's Sony's deal this year?
The thing that I don't like about Sony, but I also do like, is they know how to hype up stuff. What the problem is Sony likes to show games that aren't coming out for 3 or 4 years. Whereas Xbox is like, hey, this is what's coming out now. And you're like, okay, awesome.
Right.
But Sony's like, oh, you think that's cool? Look at all these amazing things. But they're not coming out until 2020.
Right, yeah. But, so they're too far in the future for you.
Exactly. But at the same time, what they show is cool.
Yeah, but you never know if it's going to happen.
Exactly,
You never know what's going to happen in the next several years.
Yeah.
So
I like looking at the old pictures, old black and white pictures of the concept cars from like the 50s when they're like, this is what cars will look like in 10 years.
Oh, man, concept cars got me so hyped until I found out what they really end up looking like.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't there
I have a...
Go ahead.
So, like, with this Xbox, the new Xbox, so they reveal it and they talk about it now, so that basically, is this like the perfect amount of time before Christmas for people to get all pumped up about it? Is that like the timing of it?
Exactly. Or? They have a window out, like, it's going to be coming out holiday season of this year. They don't have an exact date, though, because they want to get that holiday season so they can get those Black Friday shoppers in there to buy it. Because they want to win the console war, and I say console war, but it's nothing compared to the console war between Nintendo and Sega back in the 90s.
Yeah, that was the ultimate.
They were calling each
now,
other
now. I'm
going
to sound like a big wannabe maybe, but I don't know a lot about games, but I am still way infatuated with all of the VR aspects of games.
Yeah.
So like the PS4 with the VR games or whatever. Yes, I'm saying how terrible I sound. So is that something that people are they expanding on this, or is that kind of a fad that's like, oh, that is what it is, now let's do something else?
Well, PlayStation came out with their own first-party version of VR, and what Xbox is doing is they partnered with Oculus, the big computer one. So whenever...
Doesn't Facebook own Oculus?
Yep. Facebook.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're, I guess they're partnering with, I guess technically, Oculus and Facebook for that. But what some people are speculating is that during the conference, it's going to be revealed that the new... It's called Scorpio, the new Xbox.
Okay.
They're going to say that Scorpio...
It's like a Bond villain.
It sounds so cool, though.
Oh, it's the Simpsons Bond, fake Bond villain, right?
Yeah, Hank Scorpio.
Scorpio, yeah. Okay.
Yep, you only move twice. That was the name of that episode. But they're speculating that Scorpio will be released with Oculus as a bundle.
Oh, okay.
So. Okay.
I'm all for the VR stuff. I love it. I love the idea of, you know, more immersive worlds, especially the more they can move towards VR that's not distracting, like that's not like a weight on your face, the lighter they can make that, you know, so that, you know, it's kind of similar to 3D with glasses, right? Like 3D can be pretty awesome, especially if you've got a really bright screen.
Yeah.
But you have to put glasses on your face, you know, and so it's like until that becomes a little more invisible, even VR will have a little distraction for me. But it's really cool. Some of the VR stuff I've seen have been like, oh, wow, this is the next generation. This is the next level.
I was going to say, have either of you tried VR at all?
Yes. Yeah, the VR stuff that I've tried has been phenomenal.
Yeah, same here. There's a few, like the gaming systems I've played a little bit. You know, I don't really, playing's a weird thing. I just basically stand in the Batcave and look around and you know, freak out. Like, I don't know if I played anything on that.
Mine was the same, except for I was not in the Batcave. I was in the Mythbuster studio.
Oh, nice.
I was like, look at all these toys.
I have a buddy here in Nashville with, I should know the company. I think it's called the Black Box. And that's what they do. So I came in and they hooked me up, and they actually, when you in their little arena where they have you, I'll keep this short, where they have you, once you put the glasses on, the default setting for it is the holodeck from Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, nice.
So when you look through a doorway, you, like, while you're sitting in there, you can see the hallways of the Enterprise out there.
Oh, that's cool.
And then, so that's what, it was really great. That's what they use to demo it for everybody else when they come in and they're like, hey, this is what we can do for your company. And that's the default, you know.
Oh, that's fun.
But anyway, yeah, I love that. I love that stuff.
The only one we haven't talked about, Andrew, is Nintendo. Any expectations from Nintendo's stuff this year? Because they've already got the Switch out. They can't keep it in stores.
Yeah.
So what are they going to highlight?
I'm expecting them to show something along the lines of Smash Bros., maybe Mario Kart.
They just released a Mario Kart game, right? I mean, it was an update of the Wii U Mario Kart game.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to release, you know, a full new
Mario Kart?
Yeah, but maybe a Pokemon, something along... They have to do something with Pokemon.
What's the Mario game that they already announced that's supposed to come out holiday season?
Mario World?
It's something where he's, like, running around in, like, actual cities and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I will be the first to admit, whenever the console war was going on back in the 90s, I went along the way of Sega. So the only...
I have drawn my line.
Well, I'm just saying the only Nintendo console I've owned was the NES.
Right.
So yeah. I never had a GameCube, a 64, or any of those,
yeah.
Or even a Wii. So my knowledge of Nintendo is lacking.
I don't know if I will ever get over the fact that they named their console Wii. That is one of the most incredible things in the history of gaming.
It's the highest selling console in history.
I know. This is like WII.
We would like to play.
It's amazing.
But if you have never watched a E3 conference, I actually do recommend, because it is a spectacle.
And I will
it
say,
is huge.
And I will say, I recommend checking out Flick Freak's coverage on the conferences too. I think Andrew will be live streaming
every single
conference from their YouTube channel with guests, kind of commenting on stuff. So
thanks for the shout out.
Oh no, it's great stuff. In fact, one of your most watched videos is from an E3 conference, and actually Danae was in it. So
yeah. Danae, that was our second most viewed video ever.
Yeah. So
which was great. Oh wow.
I want my ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I became a hashtag. That was cool.
So I would definitely recommend checking out Flick Freak's YouTube during E3 because they do great, great coverage.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about The Mummy.
You are alive because you were cursed.
Cursed? By what?
The ultimate evil. Welcome to a new world of gods and monsters.
You saw that, right?
The Mummy. Nick Morton is a soldier of fortune who plunders ancient sites for timeless artifacts and sells them to the highest bidder. Is that who he was? When Nick and his partner come under attack in the Middle East, the ensuing battle accidentally unearths Amunet, a betrayed Egyptian princess. Morton must now stop the resurrected monster as she embarks on a furious rampage through the streets of London. Mm. We like to start off with just a quick, did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was it just okay? Andrew, why don't you tell us first?
It's a really bad movie. I didn't like it, but there are fun parts to it.
So
I didn't like it.
Didn't quite go to hate it, but firmly in the didn't like it category.
Didn't like it.
What about you, Josh?
Same.
Yeah, me too.
I was nonplussed.
I'm maybe even a little closer to it was just okay than didn't like it, but I'm definitely in the didn't like it. It's not like right on the border, but there are some things to enjoy in this movie.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll start here before we move into the pros and just say, I get a little tired of every movie having to be the worst movie ever made or the best movie ever made. And it seems like when these kind of movies come out and it's not a success, it's like, oh, that movie's so terrible. It's awful. It's the worst thing. And it's like, I mean, it's a bad movie, but there are certainly worse movies that come out. You know what I mean?
Spoiler real quick, not for the movie.
Okay.
there's only one thing in this movie that's keeping me from saying it's okay. And it's a huge thing that I hated.
Oh, okay. And it's a spoiler that we'll talk about in spoilers, or
no,
will we
no,
talk
no.
about
it's
it in the...
In cons. Like, it's
okay.
A,
okay,
it's
sure.
It's a tease, I guess I should say.
So we didn't like the movie, but what are some things that we did like about it? Josh, what are some of your pros?
There's one scene that I thought was conceptualized well and executed really, really well. An action scene.
I was going to ask if it was an action scene, because that's most of the stuff I liked was in the action stuff.
I got to say, I didn't hate everything else, but I don't know that I really... I mean, I'll listen to you guys, see if you had different thoughts, and maybe it'll spark something, but I don't remember really liking anything other than that one scene,
well,
honestly.
I mentioned the action in general. I think Tom Cruise is in his element when he's doing those crazy action, stunty kind of things. He once again has a scene with the plane that is absolutely amazing. It's like that's his thing in every movie now.
That was real. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I figured a lot of it. I figured they did what they rode the vomit comet probably. And
they 67 yeah. times.
Oh, wow.
To do that.
Well, that's the scene. That's the scene I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty spectacular, and we saw in we saw it in IMAX laser again, and again, it just adds a whole, you know, clarity to that stuff that's absolutely incredible.
I wanted to say that real quick. This is con, but I'm just going to throw it out while we're talking about IMAX laser.
Uh-huh.
There were some scenes in this movie that were really dark, and even in IMAX laser, it was hard to see what was going on. I can't even imagine what it was like in a regular theater.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I was about to ask you, because that's one of my problems, and I was literally about to ask.
It's so dark.
Could you see
it's
that stuff
so
better?
Dark.
It was...
Well, we could see it better, but it was still really dark. I can't imagine watching this movie in a regular theater in 3D.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine having to see that stuff. Josh, did you see it in 3D or just regular?
Just regular, and a regular theater, and it was... Yeah, it was dark and it moved too. I didn't understand. Like there's a scene in the truck that action scene while they're in a truck. I mm-hmm. didn't have any idea what was ever happening in that whole scene.
Yeah,
I didn't know what was happening.
See, I don't ever remember feeling that. Like I feel like I could see what was going on. There were times where it was dark enough that I had to really pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the IMAX laser helped with that quite a bit.
Yeah. We were talking about Tom Cruise. I want to know what it is about that guy that's so enthralling. This is definitely not the best Tom Cruise performance ever, but he's still charming, you know?
Well, he's just charismatic. Some people just have it, man. Like, they just they pop on screen. They're just charming, charismatic people. He is definitely one of those guys. As we get into the cons, I'll talk about his performance because I really didn't like it in this movie.
Cruise?
Yeah. I think it's a total miscasting.
Yeah.
For what they were trying to do with this movie. But he himself, and like I said, when he's in those action scenes, you can tell he's in his element. That's, you know, that's where he's his best, and you love watching him. There are some spoilers, I guess I could say, about that one scene we keep talking about that I'm just like, yes, that's a movie you could have made. If you had turned this movie into a more earnest kind of Tom Cruise-y feel movie to it, I think that movie might have been a little bit better because there's some real earnestness in that scene that just isn't in a lot of the other choices that they're making throughout the rest of the movie.
Another performance I liked, I don't want to say too much just in case people don't know that they're in the movie, but Russell Crowe's character,
mm-hmm.
I actually really liked.
Did you?
It worked for me, you know?
Didn't necessarily work for me.
Really?
Yeah. But I don't... But
I thought he did a good job
with
exactly.
it. Yes, exactly.
They're setting up the universe.
And let's go there. Can we just go there? Because I'm kind of... Unless you have another pro...
Yeah, I do. One more pro real quick. Because a lot of people are going to compare this to the 1999 Mummy movie.
Which, by the way, I watched this morning.
Yeah.
I threw that in this morning and watched it.
I watched the original last night after this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I think I might like Amunet, the new mummy, more than I liked Imhotep as a villain. I think that she is way creepier than he was.
Well, that's true. I definitely think she has a bigger creep factor.
Yeah.
In fact, they pushed a lot of the creepiness in this one, and the sensuality, for that matter, was really pushed for a PG-13, I thought, too. Although, the original Mummy did that, too.
Yeah.
With a lot of the silhouettes and, you know, very brief nudity, that kind of stuff. But,
yeah.
And I had forgotten that until I watched the 1999 one this morning. I was like, oh, that's kind of a mummy thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they do.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, you wanted to...
Well, okay. I wanted
dark
to
universe.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the dark universe because I think this may be one of the biggest mistakes they made in making this movie. And I kind of touched on it at the beginning of the podcast with what I said. When you think of beginning an expanded universe, you think of a movie like Iron Man. Well, Iron Man didn't take the pains to say, you know, put it on a big sign and big loud, hey, this is a big expanded universe. Like, you know, Captain America's shield is in his thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like there are some Easter eggs there, but they aren't like trying to enter. It would be as if Nick Fury was in Iron Man as opposed to just the post-credit scene. You know what I mean? It's like,
exactly.
It's give your movie a chance to be a great movie first and then worry about, you know, zooming out and showing the bigger picture. You know, it's like, I think of it as one of those, you know, the mosaics, like the pictures that are made of a bunch of other little pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
Just make sure those little pictures are good. And then when we zoom out, we'll see a cool big picture. But you just, there's so much focus on the big picture stuff in this movie.
I will say, though, even though it made this movie bad, the whole Dark Universe setting up that universe, I'm still excited for all those other movies.
I actually am, too. I actually like the idea. I just think they went about it the wrong way.
Exactly. It made this a bad movie, but the possibilities moving forward seem really fun. Unfortunately,
well, it
just made this bad. Go ahead.
It makes me nervous in the sense that this is obviously just the, you know, studio hands all in it trying to turn it into something, right? I mean, the actual movie itself didn't have any, like, director craftsmanship left in it. It was all, like, studio decision making, and if that's how they're going to handle all of them, you know, if that's what they're saying, like, this is how, then I'm not interested. I mean, I'll see the other ones, but I went from being excited to now very cautious about the rest of them.
Yeah, me
because
too.
Tom Cruise in himself, like, we were talking about his performances, you can always count on his choices. Like, I will always trust him, because I'm like, even if I don't love Tom Cruise, and I do like him, but he's not my favorite, but he always makes really great choices, and I really feel like he blew my trust on this one. Yeah. It makes me nervous about, you know, other people who I love, you know, but now it's like, oh, are these choices down the line, are all of them gonna, like, if he can lead me the wrong direction, can they?
The way they forced the Dark Universe stuff, even in considering kind of the conclusion of this movie, without getting into spoilers now, and I'll talk more detail about this at the end, but basically Tom Cruise's character choice and development towards the end of this movie really kind of undercut any character work of his character to serve a greater purpose in the bigger universe.
I almost hated the ending of this movie.
Yeah, it was awful.
I did hate it. Yeah. I did hate it. It was, it's I'll, going into the movie, like his first, that first 45 minutes of him, and then, you know, kind of how it ends, it's like somebody said to him, all right, this is our first thing, just like Iron Man was, so you need to do your impression of that character. Like it's like they took the template of the roguish person, you know, that you love to hate or hate to love or whatever, you know, who's still got a lot of charm, and they're like, this is going to be you, and only it fell flat, and
because it's not him.
Yeah.
It's not him, and then the movie ends, and it's like there's no, like you said, undercut, there's no, like, How is he different? He's not different at all.
And we can talk about Jake Johnson for a second, too, because I love Jake Johnson. I love his TV work. I've loved some of the movies he's been in. And he is awful in this. And I don't know that it's his fault.
That's the when I said that there was one con that kept me from liking this movie, I hate his character and what they did with it so much.
Yeah.
That's the only thing keeping you from saying this movie's okay. If you cut him out, which you totally can, you cut his character out of this movie entirely, there's nothing different. He adds nothing. I hate every single time he's on the scene or on screen.
Yeah, and it totally emphasizes the disconnect of the tones, right? The disconnect of the movie they wanted to make, you know, quirky, silly-wise, and the movie that Tom Cruise would make more earnest, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It just emphasizes that disconnect.
Well, it's another one of those situations where you, like, in the future, we'll watch another movie, and those characters are in it, and you're talking about their history. It's a lot more interesting to say, you know, to know, like, in exposition who Jake Johnson is, who he is, as opposed to watching it happen.
Right. Yeah.
It's a one-off joke.
Yeah.
That should be told. And like, oh yeah, this is our history, as opposed to watching it happen.
Yeah. Here's what I say they should do. They tried to sprinkle in humor into this movie just to, you know, make it more accessible to a wider audience. But here's the problem. This is the Dark Universe. I mean, these are the most iconic horror characters of all time. I say back in the day, they were the scariest things ever. I say double down on that. you try and reimagine these movies, make them for the modern audience the scariest movies ever made.
Yeah, you could have gone that route, but they decided not to.
I think it was a huge mistake.
I wonder if part of that is the original, you know, the Brendan Fraser mummies. They definitely had that quirky sense of humor.
I'm talking about the 1930s.
No, I know what you're saying. I'm just wondering if they're making choices based on the love. Because I got to tell you, in some ways, maybe I'm totally wrong on this. In some ways, if they wanted to make the movie I think they wanted to make, they should have had Jake Johnson be the main character. Like, he would have been a better kind of, you know, quirky, interesting lead than Tom Cruise would have been, because Tom Cruise is playing a different movie. Or somebody like Nathan Fillion, or somebody who has that, you know, that quirkiness, that sense of humor to them that they can really...
a little wink.
Yeah, a little wink kind of thing. Or, you know, like a Bruce Campbell kind of idea, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, Tom Cruise was just such the wrong choice. I have a couple other cons. I'm sure you guys do as well.
Yeah.
I'll start with this. It's my main one. This movie is so over-explained. This movie treats the audience like such an idiot. They start with so much voiceover and so much backstory on this new villain. And then they tell us the same story two more times in the movie. Like, it's like, you know, we understand what's going on. There's a moment, you know what, maybe I won't give the line until spoilers, but there are literally moments in this movie where characters repeat what just happened on the screen to make sure we understand it.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of live action role playing. Where there's a game master who has to tell you, like, you can't see what's going on.
Yeah, it's just
I would double down to what you said, Aaron, and I would say that they repeat it three times in the first act.
Yeah.
Like in the first act, and that makes for a 45-minute first act of this movie before anything happens of interest. It's 40 or 45 minutes into the movie.
I have to say, if somewhere between this and American Gods is a good amount of exposition. Like, you know, American Gods throws you into this universe and tells you nothing, and you're left like drowning trying to figure it out. And this movie tells you everything. Somewhere in between is the perfect amount of letting me know what I need to know.
I'll defend American Gods.
Well, you've read the book, so that makes it easier for you to understand.
Okay. One last thing?
Yeah, what's your one last thing, Josh?
Having said all that, I still couldn't hate it. You know, I didn't like it, but I didn't hate it. And
right.
I think there's like those couple of those things that do, and maybe it is like the faith. Maybe there is a little bit of optimism about like, well, maybe this is going to be better.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to bring up, because you're right. We're all talking about this in very negative terms, but none of us came out of there like loathing this movie. And I really think that's important to say, because again, there are just, you know, mediocre, somewhat bad movies that come out. They don't have to be awful, and I don't think this is awful. It's just, you know, mediocre to bad.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Normally for action movies, I would say, you know what, it's still fun enough to go and see in theaters. For even this one, oh, I think waiting for it to come to like Redbox or something, I don't think I could say spend money to see it in theaters, because I don't think there's enough there to like draw an audience in to say, oh yeah, it's worth at least seeing in theater.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that as well. My one last thing is another con. I thought the character work was really poor in this. It kind of brought it out when I was reading kind of the pre-written, you know, transcript about the main character. And I was like, well, if I'd have seen that guy on screen, I would have had a great time.
Yeah.
It's like, where was that guy?
The chemistry between Tom Cruise and Annabelle Wallace is almost non-existent.
Yeah. And she was really rough. All these actors had a rough position to be in, because I don't feel like they were given enough to really define who their characters were or define what their motivation was. What was their evolution, their change? I mean, it's just the character work in this was almost non-existent.
Yeah.
I would say the same with the director and the writers. They, I feel it felt like everybody's hands were tied from somebody who is making decisions about a movie franchise that they shouldn't be making artistic decisions about.
Yeah.
It felt like the studios, like Universal's just all in their business, and they didn't look like anybody had an inch
right
to be their own movie.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's a great point. I think I'd join Andrew's recommendation to, you know, maybe even wait till the next one's out and check it out before you go see that or something. Just lower your expectations quite a bit. And if you
it's better than League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Can we say that?
Yes. Well, that's not we'll IVAR, but yeah.
I think we can say that for sure. Before we move on to the best ever challenge, a word about our supporters. They are awesome. Thank you so much to those who support the Studio DNA Podcast Network. It's at patreon.com/studioDNA. Support starts at $3 a month. Some awesome perks come with that. Every supporter has access to a dedicated podcast feed where you get bonus episodes, including the patron pre-show, which we already recorded, where Josh revealed his Sift shame, the movies he hasn't seen. We talked about that.
Dun, dun, dun.
So you can check that out just by being a supporter at patreon.com/studioDNA. And even beyond that, know that you're keeping this podcast network going and creating content like this. Thank you so much for being a part of that. All right, on to the best ever challenge, guys. We're going to do the best.
Dun, dun, dun.
We're going to do the best ever Tom Cruise movies. We'll each list our top three. We'll start at number three and go to number one. If you have one higher on your list than where somebody else names it, you can trump it.
Trump.
So all you got to do is say Trump, and we'll wait till it's on your list at the higher ranking to talk about it. And then we'll do some honorable mentions after we're done. But let's narrow it down. What are the three best Tom Cruise movies ever? We'll start at number three. Andrew, why don't you kick us off this time?
I'm going to kick it off with a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, Magnolia.
All right.
Man, this is probably the best performance. Maybe one of the best top performances Tom Cruise has ever given. Got him an Oscar nom, and I think it's well-deserved. I love spiderweb movies like this, and you know where it's a whole bunch of stories coming together, and then they all
if they're done well.
This one is done really well, and just because it's like we've said this a million times, whenever we do best ever challenge, it's not necessarily the best Tom Cruise performance. It's just the movie in general,
correct?
Because I think that it's actually William H. Macy who really steals this movie and makes it his own.
I think it's the frogs.
The frogs, yeah. The raining frogs, yeah. But man, that is a weird ending.
All right.
That's a weird, weird ending. But
I love it.
Yeah. I love that movie so much. If you haven't, it's not really a very well-known movie, I would say. But if you have not seen Magnolia, I highly recommend it. Not something you can watch in the background. You really got to focus on what's going on.
My number three, and I don't know that I would have had it here if I had not rewatched this recently with my boys, is the original Mission Impossible. It holds up really well for me. You think of movies now that do a lot of the twisty intrigue, you know, spy kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie was one of the first that did it in what felt like a modern way to me. And I really loved the twists and turns in it. I love the acting, the characters, the performances. I think it's a really tightly woven story, and I really enjoy the first Mission Impossible, so that's in at number three for me.
Well, that silent pressure room is like one of the most famous scenes in film history. So.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah.
What about you, Josh?
That's
what's
the thing
your number
about franchises get a little messed up sometimes because they get judged based on the whole franchise, and it's hard to pick them out sometimes. I will say first, Magnolia was on my honorable mention because I was being like following the law of Tom Cruise movies, and I was like, well, it's a great performance, but it's not a Tom Cruise movie. So that's why I ended up on my honorable mention instead of in my top three.
No,
You guys know the rules a little better than I do.
Yeah, no worries. We have people interpret the rules in different ways all the time. You know, for us, we're basically talking about once Tom Cruise is in a movie, it's on the available movies list, and then you just say which are the best movies in that available movies list.
Saul Goodman.
Sure. That's why I had my honorable mention. It was my, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
My number three is Minority Report.
I'm going to have to trump you. We'll have to hold off and talk about it later. I've got Minority Report coming up.
It was in my honorable mentions. So what's your number?
I think you're up, Andrew. You're number two.
Number two?
Yep.
The Last Samurai.
Oh, interesting.
It is in my top 100 movies of all time. Yeah, it's brilliant. Again, he's not the star of this movie. I think Ken Watanabe just takes that movie and he like drives away with it and says, this is my movie. It's the immersion into that Japanese culture. A lot of people, you know, knocked it originally because it's The Last Samurai starring Tom Cruise. You know, they thought it was.
Yeah.
But then when I actually watched it, I'm like, oh, wow, there's actually something to this.
Yeah. No, and, it's a good film for sure.
Oh, it.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies where if it's on, I'm going to watch it. It's just so enthralling. It hits every single mark. It's funny. It makes you cry. Great fight choreography. I love it.
I have a feeling I might get trumped on my number two.
Yeah.
My number two is A Few Good Men. So nobody had it at number one?
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Wow. Okay. I'm the only one who put it on my list, apparently.
Well, Aaron knows what my number one is, so it was in my honorable mentions.
I can't believe you guys don't have Few Good Men in your top three.
It's number four.
It's great. There's other stuff I like more.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
cool.
That's the thing about Tom Cruise. He's got a solid roster.
I'm surprised you didn't pick what I thought you were going to pick.
All right, well,
we'll get there.
A Few Good Men. It probably has so much to do with the script, so much to do with Sorkin. But that if you watch that full courtroom scene, you can't help but get into it every single time. It's an incredible set of performances in an incredible film, and I just one of the best. So I had to put it at number two.
Yep.
What about you, Josh? What's your number two?
That's great. Vanilla Sky.
Wow.
Nice. That movie did something to me when I watched it that broke my brain. And this might be one of those examples of, like I was talking about earlier, where the autobiographical nature of it plays a lot into it. But it's just that when that movie came out, and it was just it spoke directly to me at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how to explain it, because it's not like I was walking around with a broken face, but I thought it was, and I went back and watched the original after that. And the original's great, but even with that, it just didn't have the same, like this one really did something to me.
Yeah, no, that's a good choice. Yeah. All right, let's hit our number ones. Andrew, what's yours?
It is in my top 10 movies of all time. I love it so much. It is the Jamie Foxx Tom Cruise movie Collateral.
Yeah, I wondered if that would be it. Collateral's great. Definitely in my honorable mentions.
Yeah. Like I said, it's in my top 10. It's those two guys and then Mark Ruffalo in a role I would never imagine Mark Ruffalo in, but he nails it. And the chemistry and the character work between Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx is textbook. I don't think there is a better version of like two people at odds against each other just trying to understand one another. Because both guys, they won't admit it, but they're fascinated by each other. And it's this weird circumstance that they find themselves in where Tom Cruise is an assassin that's in Jamie Foxx's cab having him drive him around so he can kill people all night.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx changing. Just the way that Jamie Foxx turns from one character into another by the beginning and end of that film it's Oscar worthy.
Yeah, people just forget how important character is and how important it is. And we talked about this in the Mummy review too. How important it is to serve that evolution of a character, and that can be the most compelling thing about a movie, because it is the thing that you can relate to the best, is having those moments of change, you know, and becoming something different and understanding something in a new way.
That's happening a lot more in television now, in our new renaissance here, right, where they're building shows around an arc instead of an episodic formula. It's more and more happening. They're like, okay, how's this character going to change by the time we're done telling the story? There's an ending to the story.
Yeah, I mean, that was the center of Breaking Bad, right? Like, that was the whole thing,
absolutely.
Was about his, you know, how he transformed.
And I think that's a great comparison between, you know, what, you know, they did in Breaking Bad and what Jamie Foxx does. Obviously, it's over a way longer period of time, both chronologically and figuratively, being a television show compared to a movie. But another thing I found fascinating is how the way that Tom Cruise makes himself not the center of attention as he normally does. In his movies, you know, it's like he's so charismatic, magnetic. But at the same time, in this movie, he can just blend into the background.
Yeah, he kind of turns his gravity down a little bit.
What he did to train for that movie I found really fascinating is that he signed up with UPS to, like, deliver packages. And he, like, delivered packages, and he tried to go about doing it without people recognizing that he was Tom Cruise.
Interesting.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Oh, to be that famous.
Yeah.
To have a social experiment where you can try not to get recognized.
And something that really made me mad.
Listen, I did that the other day. I was so successful. You have no idea how many people didn't recognize me. It was incredible.
What really made me mad in that movie is that Tom Cruise has gray hair. And the fact that he looks so handsome with gray hair still, it made me mad that it doesn't matter how old that guy gets, he's still going to look good.
My number one has already been mentioned, so I think Josh mentioned it as his number three. Minority Report is my favorite Tom Cruise movie.
That's not what I thought it was
going to be. I love that movie so much. Spielberg's a huge part of that, like Josh mentioned. It is one of the best sci-fi concepts that I've seen actually executed in a really smart way. And it's so strangely sci-fi and yet feels so real and feels more and more real every year, you know? Even down to like the self-driving cars, different things that are in that, you know, that movie and that version of the future. In fact, the only movie that I've really felt even more that way was probably Her, about like, this is the way the world is going to be, you know, eventually, but this world feels so real and lots of great performances and a great story. It's just a great story as well.
That scene where he's fighting while the car is being built around him is one of the coolest scenes.
It is cool.
And then he just sits in the seat and drives
away. But then
away.
You couple it with what sci-fi is so good at of taking, you know, these dilemmas, right? These character dilemmas, like, or social ideas, and going, okay, this is a safe place to kind of talk about.
Yeah,
it,
exactly.
Right. Whereas, like in real life, you're like, well, I know how I am in black and white, but then you kind of see like a sci-fi version of it, and you're like, oh, this is, I can safely watch it from here and get a better perspective on my opinion. You know, obviously the movie's got something to say about it, but. Yeah, the way it tackled that stuff was so good.
Yeah, it's so great. What's your number one, Josh?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Wow.
I get it.
That movie, you talk about top 10 movies. Like, that movie, I felt, when I watched that movie, I felt like it was custom made for me. Like, it's my example of, like, a perfect blockbuster movie. Like, it's everything I wanted. It was funny and sharp and a lot of action and everybody was great. And I don't have anything bad to say about that movie.
I do have something bad to say about it, but I will tell you this.
Is it that you haven't watched it enough? Because that's the only bad thing that you can say about that movie.
I love Edge of Tomorrow. And in fact, I have the same reaction as it probably would have been my number one up until the last 10, 15 minutes of the film. Mm. And the ending of that movie does real unfortunate damage to that film, in my opinion.
Now that I understand, that I get.
I understand that. I disagree, but I understand.
I really that end made me angry because of how much I loved the rest of the movie and because of how much I felt it did not hold together and did not make any sense whatsoever. So, but again, maybe that's just my experience. And I have actually watched it, you know, a couple more times, and I felt the same way both times. But
it's, if you love video games, you're going to love Edge of Tomorrow because it is everything you go through, like dying in a level. You're like, okay, I can't go in that room now. I know I'm going to die.
So it's
whenever
perfect.
You come back.
Oh, that stuff is so perfect.
That's exactly what a video game is, and they made it real, and it's fantastic. And that was Billy, what's his name?
I'm not sure.
Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
He was so good in that movie. One of my favorite lines of any movie ever in that movie is Tom Cruise looking at him going, okay, Sergeant, you're an American. No, sir, I'm from Kentucky.
Good stuff. All right, let's throw out some honorable mentions.
I cannot believe neither of you had this movie as your number one.
Okay.
Rain Man.
Yeah, Rain Man's definitely in my honorable mentions for sure. It really is, in my opinion, the movie that made Tom Cruise who he is. Like, you really get a chance to see how charismatic he is in that movie. And, of course, Dustin Hoffman's great in it, too. But
oh, yeah.
But, yeah, no, that's a great choice.
Did Rain Man win Best Picture? Did it win Best Picture?
Did it?
I'll throw out another one. You mentioned the first Mission Impossible movie, which is one of my favorites. But my favorite Mission Impossible is number 4, Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, I had Ghost Protocol on there. I also had Five on there as well. Those are both phenomenal films.
Three and two are terrible.
Well, three is not terrible. You need to watch three
terrible.
Again. I mean, that performance by Philip Seymour Hoffman alone in three is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and its fun factor makes up for some of the other.
Yeah, I like three. I actually really enjoy three. Two, I would agree with you. Two is man.
They John Woo'd that movie hard.
Yeah.
John Woo'd it.
Rain Man, 1989 Academy Award for Best Picture.
It did win.
There you go.
Okay.
Unless that's just a nomination, but it looks like it. Yeah. And Hoffman won Best Actor.
Oh, obviously he won.
Barry Levinson won Best Director. Maybe these are nominations. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. It says awards.
I don't believe you guys didn't have. This is like made for honorable mention. Tropic Thunder.
It was my next one I was going to bring up because it took me until probably the end of that movie before I realized that was Tom Cruise. I'm not even lying. I felt really dumb.
His arms are so good in that movie.
Oh, they're hairy and his fat sausage fingers.
Yeah.
I mentioned Tropic Thunder in my review of The Mummy because it's not that Tom Cruise can't do comedy. It just has to be a comedy that where he can still be earnest. That character in Tropic Thunder is a good example of how Tom Cruise can be an earnest comedian. Like, that character is very earnest, even though he's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, you know, he just can't be quirky. Tom Cruise doesn't do quirky very well. It's just not in his wheelhouse.
I wouldn't.
The nuance is kind of lost on him
a little bit. Yeah.
That nuance.
If somebody would have told me that some of the best comedy duo I would have seen that year was Tom Cruise and Bill Hader, I would have laughed at them. But those guys are funny.
Well,
oh,
great
man.
That,
what else you got in the honorable mention?
I'm going to take you to The Danger Zone, Top Gun.
No, come on. That's not a great movie.
Yes, it is. I will fight you on this one. It is so good. Not physically. I will argue with you.
I will grow a better mustache than you on this one.
Yeah. Hey, I saw your Hulk Hogan mustache.
Yeah,
that's right.
I can do it.
But man, I don't. It's nostalgia factor for me. I love Top Gun. That soundtrack is great. Yes, the volleyball scene is weird. But
I know a lot of ladies who love that movie.
Yeah, I get it. It's fun though, and it gave us one of the greatest comedy franchises ever in Hot Shots. So.
That's true. That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
True. The best thing you can say about Top Gun is that it gave us hot shots.
I have a couple that I'm sure you guys didn't have in your honorable mentions, but I like more than most people. One is the original Jack Reacher. I think Jack Reacher is a great movie.
The first one.
Yes, the first one. The second one was really bad.
I think Jack Reacher is, I didn't see the second one, but Jack Reacher is the only other time Tom Cruise let me down.
Oh, you didn't enjoy Jack Reacher then?
I did not. I felt like my dad would really love that movie, and he did, but it was 20 years too late for me.
Hmm.
I love your dad. Your dad and I are best buds now.
I'm with Aaron on that one. I like the first Jack Reacher.
Werner
Herzog as the weird villain.
The other one I wanted to mention was the War of the Worlds remake.
I hate that movie.
Really? I really enjoyed it. I felt there was a really deft touch in that movie with suspense, especially.
I enjoyed it, but I can't say it was good.
Yeah.
I agree with both of you.
You should be a politician.
on that movie, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we should mention Interview with a Vampire.
And we can mention it.
Yeah, I like it. Okay. I really do like Interview with the Vampire. Born on the 4th of July, and I don't know how you guys feel about Legend, but...
Yep, that's
got
about,
a lot of,
that's
a
about
lot
how
of,
I feel
it's got
about
legs.
It.
And somebody did...
Can I say, so this one's actually going to probably evoke a reaction, because I know most people hated it, but I like Night and Day.
Did you
I put
really?
That on my underrated Tom Cruise, because I was like, what's wrong with this movie? Why is everybody... bad-mouthing this movie. It's like it's exactly what it set out to be, I felt like.
Yeah. I'll have to watch it again. I just remember being completely devoid of plus.
Yeah. Somebody said that they thought my number one was going to be Days of Thunder. No. I mean, it's okay. It's
maybe,
okay.
Maybe Tropic Thunder is a sequel to Days of Thunder.
Yeah, that's what it is.
There you go. Those are the best ever Tom Cruise movies. Let's go on a Sift Quest, guys.
This you had is, me at hello.
You had me at Sift Quest. Yeah. These are where you ask us a question to answer, and we go on a quest together to find those answers. You can tweet at me, at Aaron Dicer on Twitter, or you can email us feedback@siftpop.com. Today's Sift Quest was launched by Christopher via Twitter. Christopher tweeted, what's a really well-received movie that you still think is underrated, as in highly praised, but not enough? I thought this was a great question.
I like it.
Yeah, it's a hard one.
I actually picked four. So, you know, we can chat a couple if you guys want to. I'll start then, since I have a few. Andrew, you said you picked one?
Yeah, just one.
Josh, what did you pick more than one?
I've got a couple, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I have four, but I don't know. They might vary in degrees of how well they receive. You know what I mean?
They're exactly. Yeah.
Multi-Academy Award-winning movies, but I'm like, I think everybody likes this movie, but they should like it more.
See, looking at my list
Edge
now,
of Tomorrow being one
more.
Of them, but yeah.
Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow being one of them. I think I have to start with what I think is the classic example of this, and that's Children of Men. Children of Men got a lot of love. But it is even better than the love it got. Like it is, it still somehow is an underrated movie. I just think
That's a great one.
That's the extreme example of this question. It's almost like that's the, the epitome of what the question is asking. Okay. So that was my big one.
I have three now.
Okay, go ahead. What's one of them?
Crash.
I don't like that movie.
See, that's why you're wrong, and that's perfect for Sift Quest. It won Best Picture. But every single person I talk to hates that movie.
Yeah, no, that's a good example if you believe it was good.
It's in my top 20 movies of all time.
Yeah.
So
that movie is a weird two thing for me because I would have felt that way when I saw it the first time, and I watched it again within the last year. I rewatched it. And while the themes hold up, that movie is so on the nose and over the top for me now. Like it did not age well for me
really?
At all.
I watched it not too long ago. And still to this day, that scene where the little girl jumps in her dad's arms to keep him safe makes me cry probably more than any other movie ever.
Yeah.
Like, I showed that to my grandpa who was in World War II, and he was bawling his eyes out.
It's so funny.
I don't know why we're laughing at your grandpa bawling his eyes out, but.
Because it's funny.
Yeah.
That was actually the movie that came to mind when you're talking about spiderweb movies in my mind when I was thinking ones that don't work. I was thinking of Crash.
I didn't want to mention Crash. I was thinking it too, like with Magnolia, but because I had it mentioned later on. But yeah.
What about you, Josh? What's one for you that is still underrated even though people like it?
This was a really hard one for me. And this, because it gets a lot of love, but Alien, the original Alien, I feel like it's getting watered down. Like people are forgetting how great that one was with, you know, all the criticism of the new ones.
Could be.
So I don't know. I think that the original gets a lot of love, but maybe this is more of a reminder that like the first one's really perfect and don't judge it based on how you feel about the new ones.
I may have to go back and watch Alien again. It's been a while. But I remember thinking I liked Aliens better even than Alien.
I do too. I like it. I love them both so much. They're in my top sci-fi movies ever. But I'm with you. I do like Aliens more.
Yeah.
Alien is one of, it may be the best horror movie. It may be my favorite horror movie. Aliens is one of my favorite sci-fi movies, but Aliens is not a, it's not a, it doesn't feel like a horror movie to me. It's an action movie with some spook factor, but Alien is downright creepy, spooky, scary to me.
Very cool. Good choice.
You're 100% right on that too.
Yeah. It's a good choice. Yeah. Another one I had, I'll actually just go ahead and list the three others I had, and you can shout out something about them if you want to, but I also had Apocalypto. Is one that I think people like, but is actually a spectacular film, in one that I think is somehow still underrated. Super 8 is another one that I think people enjoy, but I really, really love.
Did not like that movie.
And then the other one was A History of Violence. And I don't know if you ever got to see A History of Violence, but it got a lot of attention, but I think it's underrated. I think that is an incredible film. Yeah. So those are the other
those
ones
are
I mentioned.
Interesting.
That movie, History of Violence, it went away with that movie, which I didn't expect at all. It,
right.
It's
yeah.
like takes you on a left turn. You're like, whoa, okay, so this is the movie?
Yeah, it's a very yeah. it's a very yeah. well-told story, yeah. In my opinion. Yeah. What other ones did you guys have?
I had three others. The Lego Movie. People just think that that movie is, you know, just a quick, funny kid movie.
Oh, no, it's more
there,
than that.
There is yeah. something special about the Lego Movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Every single yeah. movie I'm going to mention is in my top movies of all time.
Well, and I think you're right, too, because Lego Batman came out and people were like, oh, this is just as good as the Lego Movie. And I'm like, no, that's a really funny movie, but the Lego Movie is better because
yeah,
it serves
better.
Every area of what I love about movies. You know,
exactly.
my brain, my funny bone, everything.
I have two left. This next movie I'm going to mention is ruined, like the how awesome it is by its sequels, and that's Rocky.
Oh, okay.
People yeah. think of Rocky as, you know, just the you know, yeah. and but if you
what was that? What was that again?
Oh,
okay, all right, yeah. good. Just want to make sure.
I got it. I'm way over here in Nashville, and I got it. You know what that is?
Yeah. So if you watched the first Rocky movie. There is something very special.
Oh,
there.
That's a great film, yeah.
With what's his stepbrother? What's Adrian's brother's name? It's
Paulie.
Paulie. Paulie is
the actor's name. Yeah.
Terrible person. He becomes like a he becomes funny and comedic. You know, he's the silly drunk in that first movie. He's abusive. What that movie has to say about, like, you know, family yeah. abuse and stuff like that is. Really powerful, and what it has to say about poverty in
yeah.
general.
Burt Young is the name yeah. of that actor, by the way.
Burt Young, thank you yep. very much. And the final—it's
another one of those examples of getting of the movie getting waylaid by the franchise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and people don't realize. I mean, maybe people do realize. I think a lot of people actually do realize. One of the reasons Creed is so loved and so good is because it's basically Rocky. It's, you know, very much the same movie in a different environment.
Creed yeah. is my second.
Well,
favorite
Rocky Balboa
movie.
Was the. Rocky Balboa was the same kind of thing. Like it went to the heart of the drama and not about like the spectacle of the fight.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Know? And it's, back to the human.
Yeah. It's the first movie I can remember, a sports movie anyway, where the main guy, the guy you're supposed to root for, loses. He doesn't win the fight.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
The movie came out. In
19- I know. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
He yeah. doesn't win the fight, and a lot of people think he wins, but he doesn't yeah. win. He yeah. loses to Apollo Creed. And he says before the fight happens, I'm not going to beat him. But nobody has ever gone the distance with this guy.
Yeah.
I don't want yeah. to beat him. I just want to go the distance. But there's a moment in that movie where you think he's going to win. And that role, something the good, I'm going on way too long about this movie. But people get, you know, they get washed up in the montages and stuff like that. But the actual fights in that movie are spectacular.
Yeah, they're good too.
Yeah,
the final movie I'm going to mention, and I know you don't like this movie anywhere near as much as I do because we've had many discussions.
Do I like it at all, or do I dislike it?
Prisoners.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't actively dislike it. Yeah. I have real problems with it.
Yeah, like I said, top 20 movies of all time for me. It's Hugh Jackman's oh, wow. greatest performance he's ever given. Jake Gyllenhaal's greatest performance he's ever given, even better than Nightcrawler. I'll argue with people on that one all the time.
Yeah, I would have that argument. We should have that debate.
Okay,
at some point.
Okay, but because that whole movie, it takes you on a roller coaster. Did Paul Dano kidnap those girls? And there's parts in that movie like, oh, he definitely kidnapped those girls. Oh wait, no, he didn't kidnap those girls.
Yeah,
I love movies that take me on that roller coaster, and the twist at the end of that movie is something I did not see coming, and I love when I don't see it coming.
Yeah, no, that's a good choice. I know somebody in the live chat mentioned Prisoners as well as one of their choices of underrated, as well as Rush, which I think is actually a really good choice too.
Totally agree.
The racing movie. Did you have any others that you wanted to mention,
Josh? I have a couple. Run Lola Run is one of my favorite
movies.
Oh,
yes.
I think it had
soundtrack.
A lot of great buzz. But it's one of those movies when I talk to people, they're like, oh, I've never heard of it because it was an international, you know,
mm-hmm.
release. And so that's one that I think maybe I'm preaching to the choir, you know, in the world, but in our country, there's so many people I run into. It's like, oh, I've seen that. Oh, I'll put it on my list or whatever. Ed Wood is my favorite Tim Burton movie. He's got a motif, and this kind of goes away from the motif, and whenever people talk about him, they miss this one. Yeah, so that and then, of course, I have Edge of Tomorrow just because they're talking about Tom Cruise stuff, and I love that movie so much. But I think you summed up why most people, you know, why it doesn't get more love is that last 15 minutes, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I think that me. I think with Edge of Tomorrow, a lot of people would see that trailer and just cast it aside as just another Tom Cruise action movie when there's a lot more to it.
Well, especially when he had just come out with
Oblivion.
Oblivion. Wasn't that before Edge of Tomorrow, or was it after?
I think it was after.
Yeah, it was right before.
Oh, was it right before? Because I remember, remember thinking they felt very similar. Whichever one was first, they came out really close to each other, and I was like, I almost mixed them up sometimes in my brain. I actually liked Oblivion more than most people, but yeah. So it was very easy for that movie to get lost, I think. And then the fact that they decided to have multiple titles—that's always fun, you know. After the movie's already out,
that was the worst.
Oh, actually, they're coming out with a sequel to it, and the sequel is going to be called Live, Die, Repeat now.
Is it going to... Well, see, originally they had said the sequel was going to be Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat. And then somebody debunked that, I thought, and I don't know.
On IMDb, the sequel is listed as Live, Die, and Repeat.
Well,
where the book is called... It's based on All You Need Is Kill. That's the name of the book, which is a tons better title than all of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great point. Let me just stick with that. Yeah. That's amazing.
It's not. It doesn't really sum up what the movie's about very well. But still, I don't know. Edge of Tomorrow kind of does.
Yeah.
And Live, Die, Repeat really does. But again, it sounds like the studio got in and said, hey, we want to make it really clear that people know what movie this is. This is not Oblivion. This is the one where he lives, dies and then repeats.
And then repeats. Yes, exactly.
I have one more, but it's actually my buried treasure. So
all right, we'll hold it for your buried treasure. Yeah. Thanks again, Christopher, for the Sift Quest. If you want to launch a Sift Quest of your own, make sure you hit me up on Twitter, Aaron Dicer, or email us at feedback@siftpop.com. All right, we are on to the buried treasure, guys.
Can I say one thing about the Sift Quest?
Sure.
Now that's all done, I would put Children of Men, your pick, I would make that my top pick too. It didn't occur to me until you said that. But that is that's the quintessential example of this question, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. All right, let's do our buried treasure then. Josh, why don't you kick us off?
I will. And I've been out of the loop a little bit, so this may not be that buried, but maybe it is to one person, and if so, that's enough. I just finished watching Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency
nice.
That originally aired on the BBC. That show was a blast. It was everything I hoped it would be.
Well, that's Douglas Adams, right? Like same guy that did Hitchhiker's Guide and
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
And this is not the first version of a show. I think there was a miniseries based on he's written a few books with this character, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I haven't read them, so I don't know how true to those stories this is, or even if it's just tonally, you know, right on. But if it was not like wacky like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, only it was every once in a while, but the absurdity was placed in strategically as opposed to through the whole thing, which was great. And Max Landis is the director. Like he created the series for television. It's a BBC show, but there's a lot of American actors and American crew and stuff in it. So I don't really know exactly what the full market, I guess BBC, but it feels more American with some British people as opposed to British with some American people.
Well, Elijah Wood's in it, so there's your one American token right there.
There you go.
Well, Richard Schiff is in it, and like I said, Max Landis, you know, directed, wrote it. He's American, right?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a blast. It's just it's this weird mystery with just enough sci-fi. I mean, the sci-fi grows, but it comes on gently. Dirt gently, and does not overwhelm you until you find out. Like it just plays out really nice over the course of the whole series.
I like how it sounded like you just had an epiphany as you were saying that.
That's the same word.
I'm an actor. I rehearsed that over and over again before I got in front of the mic.
Nicely done. It sounded very authentic.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
So, like I said, this is going to tie into the Sift Quest as well. A movie that's great, but still underappreciated. The movie is Tom Hardy's Locke.
Oh, yeah. Good choice.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I saw the trailer for this, I'm like, so it's Tom Hardy in a car talking to people on the phone and himself for an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah, it is.
Is
about construction.
About construction work. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's not the right cement. You need the more that's not going to be strong enough for a foundation. You think that movie's going to be boring? It is so magnetic.
It is the opposite of boring, yeah.
You cannot stop watching that movie. So if you want to watch a movie about a guy talking to his family and his coworkers about construction and other life events, and you think it's going to be boring, just watch this movie. It's Steven Knight, surprisingly. So
It is the movie to me, at least as we're talking about it, most emphasizes how crucial story and character are to a film. Because you're right. Every other part of that movie is about the most boring thing you could ever think of. But because the story is great and told wonderfully, and the character is great and interesting, it works. And it works all the way through. I was never bored for a second in that movie. And I'm just watching a guy talk on the phone in the car about construction.
It's crazy. One that I started watching it as homework. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I better watch this so that I know how to talk about it if it ever comes up.
Yeah.
And it turned into like, oh, I'm watching this because I like this movie, you know.
Yeah, it's so good.
I think that Locke
transitioned over
30 years from now is going to be like studied. Like okay, so this is how you do character development for a one shot, you know, or a one scene movie.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I mean, what Hitchcock did with Rope, you know, is very similar. Yeah. Or Lifeboat was another one Hitchcock did that kind of had the same, you know, same setting the whole time. But this, it's, man, when you can do it, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
So I love that.
That's my buried treasure.
My buried treasure is becoming unburied recently after 25 years. A lot of people talking about it. Twin Peaks. I finally got around to watching the original Twin Peaks, the first and second season. So I watched all of it just because there's, you know, I felt like the revival of Twin Peaks seems very interesting to me. It seems different than other, you know, pop culture revivals in some interesting way. Before I talk about how I felt about it, have you ever watched the Twin Peaks TV show, and when did you watch it?
Yeah, that show's weird. I watched it about 5 years ago.
Okay, so you were past the fact, too, because I think it was like the early 90s, right?
Yeah, I watched it.
Well, it was 25 years ago.
Yeah, it was on a Netflix, and I was like, you know what? People are always talking about this. I'll pick it up. That show was weird, man.
What about you, Josh? What's your experience with Twin Peaks?
I never finished it. I started a long time ago before I was ready for it. So it suffered from me. And I haven't gone back to see it, but it's been on my top of my list to try and go back and see now with the resurgence as well. How long did it take you to get through it?
I did it over the last week and a half to 2 weeks, just throwing it. It was like the only thing I watched really the last couple weeks, now that it's summer and there's, you know, a lot less to keep up on TV wise. But I have to say, I really wish I had seen it when it happened, because I really didn't enjoy it that much. It certainly was weird. I get that, you know, it's David Lynch, right?
Yeah.
You know, I get that there's some real interesting stylistic things that, you know, choices he makes, the whole Black Lodge stuff, which if you haven't seen, none of this means anything to you, but where there's this universe where weird things happen. And,
well, even if you have seen it, it probably doesn't make sense to you.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. But everybody is speaking forwards, backwards in that world, and just weird stuff like that. Weird symbolism, weird, you know, spiritualistic themes, all that stuff I get. It didn't seem to have as much of a point as I wanted it to. Like, there just wasn't anything to really grab onto. So much so, in fact, that it felt like a kind of a cheap soap opera in a lot of ways, especially the second season. Especially, you know, a good chunk of those episodes in the second season just feel like who's dating who and who killed who. And, you know, it really feels like Days of Our Lives in some ways. And really, when you look at even some modern soap operas, are weird like that, too, you know? So it was kind of a letdown for me in many ways. Now, I haven't started into the new ones yet. And
I was going
to
ask.
I'm interested to see what and I'm trying to decide if I want to watch the movie, because I think there's a movie, Firewalk With Me, that happened between the first and second season and the upcoming new ones.
I didn't know that.
I think it's a prequel movie. I think it's what happened leading up to the death of Laura Palmer, if I'm understanding correctly. But so I'll probably watch that.
Where do you land on David Lynch overall?
The
guy's weird.
Yeah. I like Mulholland Drive. That's about it.
I did like
Elephant Man.
I did like Mulholland Drive, and that probably is about it for me, too.
I like Elephant Man as well.
The Straight Story was his, like, most commercial.
You know, I never saw it.
Commercially viable. It's just a normal movie. You know, it's not anything weird. It's just a movie about a guy who rides his lawnmower across country on a road trip because his car's broken or something.
Oh, that was him?
Yeah, yeah, Lynch made
I believe
that.
It. I believe it was him. Yeah,
that's a good movie. I like that movie.
Did you? I see. I haven't seen it. So
that scene where he's talking about it's like the sticks, least like breaking the sticks and the bundle and stuff like that. That's family.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that scene a lot.
I
will say this. It was an interesting experience to see actors I know come up in like their like. I think it's David Duchovny's first role was in Twin Peaks. And he comes, I don't know if I want to spoil the experience for somebody who may want to go back and watch it.
You think that leads into X-Files?
No, I don't. Well, and that's the other thing. People talk about how this show influenced like the X-Files and different things like that. And I just don't see it.
I don't either.
I don't. They seem very, very different to me. But yeah, David Duchovny's character's entrance was really interesting to me for a very specific reason that I'm not going to spoil. And then also Heather Graham. I think one of her very first roles was in the second season of Twin Peaks. So, you know, kind of seeing stuff like that.
Well, how young was she whenever?
I'm pretty young.
Yeah.
But she's the love interest of the main character in the second season.
What?
Yeah, towards the end of the second season. So the one that gets kidnapped and taken to the Black Lodge and all that kind of stuff.
Like I said, it's been a hot minute since I've seen that show. So and I don't think it's rewatchable for me.
And that was what I was going to say. If you've been thinking about going back and watching it, I would kind of caution you just to, you know, I guess I should wait till I've seen the new ones to say this. But I would think maybe just hop into the new ones and not worry about that old stuff. You know, maybe read like a primer online or something so you know the characters. But
I like how your buried treasure is something you're not recommending to people.
Well, it's not the first time. In this case, it's a buried quote unquote treasure that other people are digging up that I'm saying, let's just go ahead and keep it buried. Let's just go ahead and it's good in its own context.
Yeah.
So anyways, there you go.
It's like somebody's unburying it and you're on the other side just putting dirt right back in the hole.
That's right. Let me pile the dirt back on. Well, we did it, guys. We did a podcast.
Woohoo!
It happened.
That's how you do it.
This is how we do it.
Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other live and later shows on the network by following the feed at Mixlr.com/Studio DNA. That's MIXLR.com/Studio DNA. Great way to listen live. Huge thanks to today's guru, Josh from the Nether Region.
Woo! That's my name. Don't wear it out.
What's going on with the Nether Region? Should I say it's Josh from something else now? Like, what's happening with that? Because that's a great YouTube channel.
It's Josh from a lot of things. Nether Region, we haven't, like I said, we haven't done much on the Nether Region. I haven't done much creatively for the last year. We're getting back into it. Probably be seeing some more stuff on the Nether Region. You can follow everything I'm doing at Josh W. Childs on Twitter. And that sums it up. And I can tell you from there if you need to go back over to the Nether Region and look for something.
what was the skit? Was it Shoot from the Hip or something like that? Was that the...
Yeah.
That's a great video, man. That's good stuff. I need to go back and watch that
again.
Thank you, man. Check that out on... that's on your YouTube channel, The Nether Region. And then you can, like you said, follow him at Josh W. Childs. Much love and gratitude as well to our Patreon supporters for giving monthly to make this show and others on the network possible. Support starts at $3 a month, comes with some pretty fun perks. You can find out more at patreon.com/studio DNA. Lots of ways to connect with us if you want. SoundCloud, Twitter, you can comment in the iTunes, or you can email us feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time and you have somebody else who you know who loves movies, they probably like the podcast too. So make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than growing a second pupil in each eye. Spoiler chat for this week's movie should be next up in your podcast feed. And we will see you back next week for some chat on Cars 3. Meep, meep. That was the Roadrunner, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Run, run.
There you go.
Wow. I'm Owen Wilson.
Wow.
As a car. Wow, I've got headlights.
Wow, wheels. Wow.